not last, it's not surpassed.
It used to be a newspaper.
The Book Podcast, not outclassed, wonders en masse.
Get it all munched, everyone, up to the end of the game.
The Book Podcast. There's the ins, there's the outs, there's the shake it, the shake it all about. There's the old and the new, the wondrous legends on interview. First, not last, it's not surpassed.
Hello and welcome to a new season of Buff Extra Interviews. My name's Mark Hiles, I'm the chief football writer of the Bolton News. It might be the off-season, but here at Buff Towers, the nostalgia just never stops. So, as well as bringing you the regular chat between me and Henry, analysing the headlines and reading out all your weird and wonderful emails every Friday, we thought we'd bring back a few old friends as well. Between now and July, we'll be climbing into the Wayback Machine every single Monday to bring you a chat with a famous name in Bolton Wanderers past. Enjoy. Well, our guest on the Buff Extra this week needs absolutely no introduction from me, because Bolton Wanderers fans will know him the minute he opens his mouth. Mr. Nathan Blake. Nathan, thank you very much for joining me, mate.
My pleasure, and big love to all you Super Whites. I miss you terribly. I really, really do.
And do you know what? Sometimes when you get people on and they pay lip service towards Bolton, Nathan genuinely does miss Bolton. He genuinely does keep in touch with us. And you know your stuff, mate. You know how they're going on.
Yeah, mate. Listen, I always say to you, Mark, I'm a Cardiff boy. I played for Cardiff, loved that. Played for Newport at the end of my career, loved that. And liked all the places I played, Wolves especially, but the one that sits like a cherry on top with no sort of challenges, well, except from playing for Cardiff, of course, my home city, is Bolton, but I played for Cardiff when I was a kid, what I mean? Yeah. I think if you're talking about your career in a serious manner, as in elder then, a senior, then Bolton is just loved it.
It's fair to say the feeling was reciprocal. I think there were a few Nathans in the town as a result of you doing quite well at the time, yeah?
Yeah, and that's what I mean. That I can't say that about any other club, Mark, right? And, I love my time at Wolves. I love my time at Blackburn. It wasn't like successful as not on the pitch, it was okay. Off the pitch, I mean, like, we weren't as close and knit a group as we were at Bolton. And to hear, like, I took my daughter once to meet the, what was it called? Simon Cowell.
Not
Pop Idol. He had the X Factor, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
So, as a young lady from Bolton, I forget her name. I've still got a picture with my daughter.
Is it Sarah something?
Yeah, dark haired girl, really attractive. Yeah. And so, my daughter, myself and Darren Campbell took our kids backstage. We got a pass. So, we were in the dressing room, and the kids, my daughter was about, I think she was about 8. And his son was about 9. So they're meeting all the stars, obviously. And my daughter's quite confident and saying, oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And she said, oh, what's your name? And she said, oh, Olivia Blake. And then she said, is that your dad over there? And she's like, yeah, that's my dad. And she said, is he a footballer? And he used to play for Bolton. So went over, introduced myself, and then she said, oh, okay, yeah, my dad, there's loads of kids named Nathan after you. And I said, well, they're not mine, right? they're not my kids. My daughter was like, all these kids. You didn't tell me you had more kids. I was like, no, you don't understand. They're just, named after me. So, it's great. And I know, I've been in touch with the twin boys who were named Nathan and Blake on the phone recently. So I just love it, Matt. I genuinely love the club, and hurts to see it where it was, but great to see it, like a phoenix stand to recover.
Oh, well, I'm gonna say, you sat next to me at Newport it's a month back now or so now as we're talking. And I mean, that day, things didn't go quite right for Bolton at the time, but we didn't quite expect it to be the nervous ride it was possibly for Bolton. I thought they were coasting at that point, looked like they were going to be a promoted team.
Yeah.
Nah, Bolton never do it easy though, do they, mate? Even going back to your day.
No. And I mean, it's a bit of a cliche, but it's what most fans think about their club. You're all fans, say it. United, we never do it the easy way. City, we never do it the easy way. Bolton, we never do it the easy way. I don't think there is ever an easy way. That's the roller coaster of football, right, Mark? I mean, to hear like the fans celebrating the week before they got automatic promotion and then to concede a goal late on, which meant they weren't promoted, yeah. And that quickly turned to sort of anger, from celebration to anger. Mm-hmm. That's the roller coaster of emotions you go through as a footballer and a football fan. So it's just great to see them get over the line the week after.
I'll tell you something we do on this podcast, and that is look back into the history books, and that's where we live. It's usually a better place to live as well when you've been following Bolton as long as we have. But the one time I can say Bolton did do it easy was your favourite season. It's probably every single Bolton fan's favourite season, 96-97, like goodbye to Burnden Park.
Yeah.
You know, the way you did it that season, that's almost a textbook promotion, that.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I'm still a bit gutted about not getting 100 points. I think we
let it go, mate. Let it go. It's fine.
Yeah, I can, mate. I can. We drew a Tranmere on the final day. We should have smashed them out of sight, to be honest with you. And it's always a tricky place to go back in them days. But there's so many fond memories, Mark. I mean, it was. I always say I don't work in football. But if I did, I would take my example from that year at Bolton, right? So if I was a technical director, sporting director, I don't want to be a manager or coach or anything like that. I'm not saying I want to be a technical sports director, but if I was, that's where I would go. And I would take my example, my lessons from that season at Bolton, where we just run over everybody. And I remember the down parts of the season, which were few and far between, to be honest with you. They weren't frequent and they weren't long periods. They were maybe a game or two. But, you know, the whole camaraderie amongst the lads and the staff, and then the club staff itself, and the training ground at that point. We didn't have a great training ground. I don't even think we had porter cabins out at Chorley there.
Yeah, I
don't even think we had that. So, you know, it wasn't a great setup. It wasn't like, wow, this is like new age. Mm. But it was just, those things don't bother me. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I like people, the lads. Like I said, the camaraderie. Even the board. I remember Gordon Hargreaves used to come down into the dressing room with a few of the directors, Phil Gartside, God rest him, and Brett Warburton before games. And, you know, he was always, the chairman would always pull me off to the side and have words with me about today, you know, you play well, we win, and this and that, and this and that. And after about five or six games, it just became the normal routine for the season,
yeah.
Right? It was almost like, because I was always last out to go and warm up, and no. I would stretch a lot. So he would come in when I was stretching and speak no matter what. And but it was that kind of relationship and that kind of bond that you felt you could speak to each other like that, right? Yes. Even though he knew he was putting pressure on me, I think Gordon got to the point where he knew under pressure I performed better than if I just thought it was a bit, sort of thing. So he would come and just remind me, not just some games, every game, like for 46 game season, he was there. So, and I loved it. I loved being the main man, and I loved being, you know, don't get me wrong, we had John McGinley, we had Scoots, Scott Sellers, Per and Michael, Goodney, Toddy, Stevie McInnesby, Tomo, you know, Chrissy Fairclough, big tags. You know, we had a great Jimmy Phillips, Gavin Ward, you know, Keith Brand. We had a great squad of lads, but you know, feeling that you were the main man and made this thing tick and made this machine go, it was it was wonderful, because it was wide experience from a kid. You know,
yeah.
My local team, I was the main kid, and growing up, and then Cardiff became the main kid, then Sheffield became the main kid, then Bolton became the main kid, and yeah, it was just fitting, really. And I just loved the town, honestly. I loved the fact that we didn't go anywhere. Everything we'd done was in Bolton.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, we shopped in Bolton, we ate in Bolton, we partied in Bolton, we worked in Bolton, we trained in Bolton, we bought our clothes in Bolton from Norton Barry down the road. And it was just probably the best time of my footballing career.
Because the thing is, I mean, you arrived and you cost a few bob, it's fair to say. And
yeah.
You know, there was a lot of pressure on you right at that start, but it was only that following season that it really started to click for you, and you kind of relaxed into it a little bit, maybe.
It was. And I say to people all the time, it didn't start well for me at Bolton.
No.
Well, it started okay first five or six games. And then I quickly realised that what Colin and Roy had said to me was, all we need is someone to put the ball in the net. I was like, oh, yeah, great. And then I realised we're not quite as strong, but, you know, we're not money bags Liverpool or anything. We, you know, we have got cut our cloth accordingly. And then I kind of drifted off. And I'll be honest with you, I started missing Sheffield United. I started missing the dressing room because I wasn't fully engaged in Bolton. I wasn't submerged in it, sort of thing. I was just, it hadn't gone the way I wanted it to go first five or six games. I hadn't scored. And then, like, the tide starts to turn because the fans start to think, well, we're going to go down. So then the pressure comes and then the shouts from the stadium and all that. And you just think, and I started thinking, I want to go back to where I was popular. I want to go back to where all the lads in the dressing room were great, because we had a good dressing room at Sheffield United, make no bones about it. But, I just started to pine for it, started to miss it. And then I always say it was the, I think it was in a pre-season friendly up at Carlisle, I think we played in the following season, because I think I joined in a December or January or something like that. And I was substitute. And I remember coming on in the game, and something happened in the first 2 minutes of me being on. And I'll never forget a Bolton fan shouting, "Blake, Blake, put your ass in gear. We've been waiting long enough," or something like that. And I remember, but I remember thinking to myself, that summer I had been away on holiday and trained all the way through the summer, so I knew I was in great shape. And I remember that and thinking to myself, well, you know, he doesn't realise what's about to happen, because I was switched on already. But that was an extra little bit of fire. And never looked back after that, mate. Just opening game was against Wolves. Got a bit fortunate with the first goal. Scored a second, drilled it, and then just never looked back, mate. From there on in, it was just pleasure, pleasure, pleasure. Even in the relegation season, I didn't care. I just loved being at Bolton. Do you know what I mean? I don't get me wrong. I cared about getting relegated. Don't want to lose. But when you know you're going into a battle and you know you're not fully equipped as the man you're fighting against, you're taking a chin. And looking back, because I do look back at some old footage sometimes, and I think, oh, defensively we were not as our defensively as a team, we were terrible.
Bit naive.
We were just an attack. I mean, we were defensively, and you think to yourself, with someone like Colin Todd being in charge defensively, you think he'd be solid, set up solid. But Toddy was a footballer, man. He's a baller. It's like playing street football sometimes with Bolton. We were that good, and but we weren't good enough at that step up to stay up. Come close, very, very close. Still not that I carry any baggage, but still wonder about that goal that was over the line against Everton. But we'll let that go.
Well, because the thing is, at the beginning of that promotion season, when you went up, it was a little bit doom and gloom, wasn't it? Cause there was Sertic had gone, you know, and we mentioned him on our main podcast the other day. There was a picture of him, by the way, driving the tractor down the high street in Belgrade.
He's mad as a hatter, I swear to God.
What was he like, for starters? You'll have an insight into what he
was like. I liked Sasa. But Sasa got too big for his boots. Yeah. Right? Sasa thought he was bigger than the manager and then bigger than the club. And what happened was, because he's, as you see, he's mad as a hatter and he's very outspoken.
Yeah.
So after the goal that he scored, the wonder goal, and the fans all thought, right, everything has to go to Sasa, right? But then in the following season, after we got relegated, in the following season, Colin Todd gave us one of the hardest pre-seasons I've ever done in my life, if not the, right? And I'll never forget, we were up the steps somewhere in, like, there's a place up in Bolton where you can go up loads of steps.
Like Rivington Way.
Yeah. We went up the Rivington, that's it. Yeah. And we'd done all these different runs, and I'll never forget, Brownie was there, Phil Brown. It was a hard, hard day. And the final run, we had to do these sets of steps. And the boys were so together, it was unbelievable. And it was the last set we were doing. And we had to do single steps instead of double jumps, up like about 50 steps, and then run back down, and then join the queue and back up. And Sasa and Fabian de Freitas, I'll never forget it. They both jacked it. They both chucked it in. They both said, no more. And Toddy, I remember Toddy screaming like a bear at them, get your asses going. We were all like, because we're all in it together, right? So we're all like, come on. And they just said no. Like, it was almost like one said no, and then the other said no, and then they had to stick to their guns rather than say, okay, I'll try again. They kind of stuck to their guns, and that was kind of the end. And I knew as well, I'd gone a couple of times in the same car as Sasa to training ground, because we used to train at Halls as well.
Oh, yeah, Halls Mental Impetus, yeah.
In Bury more.
Towards Radcliffe Way, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember once or twice being in a car with Sasa and him saying to me, you have to play McGinley too old. And I was saying to Sasa, hold on a minute. I said, you can't pick the team, Sas. Right? You can't do that. Don't get above your station. You know, you can't pick the team. The gaffer picks the team and, you know, you don't know what's what, right? You don't know who's what combinations are going to work, what, because I'm still fairly new.
Yeah.
And I'm not really in what I call in the squad or the team. So I just thought, you know, this is an accident waiting to happen with Sas. And before you knew it, that day came, one of the final days of pre-season. And yeah, I think Toddy made his mind up there to say, listen, we got a 46-game war coming our way, and we can't have any of the troops, like, turning tail, simple as that. And we ended up selling them. And I think it was the best move the club made, honestly. Mm. I think what would have happened otherwise is the fans would have been sucked into thinking, oh, we're a better team just going through Sasa. Well, what would prove to be was a better team without Sasa, a far more potent with, you know, 5, 6, 7 deadly weapons, you know, Scoots on one wing, Michael Johansson on another, Per Frandsen and Tomo, the ability in midfield to shoot from distance, Tomo getting goals, you know, centre backs chipping in. Myself and McGinn created a partnership which was, you know, my best in my career. So, you know, I think as much as I like Sas, I got a lot of time for him. I haven't seen him since he left, but I liked him as a person. He was a bit wild. But then again, most of us are from council estates, so it's just the norm, right?
Of course it is.
But he did get a bit too big for his boots or above his station, I thought. And I thought Toddy done the right thing. And from there, we just didn't look back.
He certainly didn't. 25 goals that year, mate. 25 goals.
Yeah.
I think, did McGinn beat you that year?
Can't remember. Yeah. And do you know what? Dirty. Mark, I think I must have had a good 10 assists for John as well, right? Because
yeah.
We just had a click. And I don't get me wrong, I love scoring goals, but as a kid, I was a winger, so I would score and provide.
Yeah.
So being able to provide for my strike partner and having that potency of like 50-plus goals between you, listen, I don't care what team, what league, whatever it is, you know, that's a strike force, right? That's what I call an attack. So I was happy that it was the final season at Burnden and John ended up top scorer and ended up, fittingly, I thought, scoring the goal against Charlton, the goals against Charlton on the final game at Burnden, because he was the Bolton Wanderers. They loved, the fans absolutely adored him, Super John, right?
So 100%, yeah.
It was the perfect season for me. Mm. The only thing that lets it down is the 100 points.
Do you know what I think doesn't get mentioned enough though? Wolves.
Battle of Burnden.
Now that is a game. That is it. What do you remember from that one? Because that was something else, man.
I loved it. Right. Because, like I said, most of us are tearaways, right?
Absolutely.
Ragamuffin kids grew up fighting I boxed before I played football. I boxed from the age of five, right? So having a tear up was like you look forward to it, and you got to think in our team we've got then like big Gavin Ward in goal. He's like we used to call him the Terminator. You got big Jerry Tags and Chris Fairclough. Like, you wouldn't want to mess with those two.
John Sheridan
who kicked it all off, right? One of the smallest players, but proper don't mess about, like, don't take from anybody and played at the highest level. I just remember, like, the build-up to it. I've said before, Colin Todd just kept, like, prodding us with this. Oh, we're going to let him bully you. Going to let him bully you. Going to bully you all over the park, and they, you know, just not up for that kind of fight, this team, and blah, 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 blah. So it was like, what the f*** is he on about? Like, oh, yeah, going to bully you. And it was like, I'm not talking like, as soon as the fixtures, we knew the fixtures. It was like, it must have been a good month he started dropping the bomb, right? At least 3 weeks, started dropping that every couple of days in training. Dean Richards, God rest him, he's passed now, but Dean Richards, he'll bully you all over the park, and boys were like, okay, man, you wait till this game comes. Like, we are going to ruin them. We're going to ruin this team. We're going to absolutely ruin them. And it fell that way. And then obviously we had the big tear up as well with them.
Oh, my word.
Which went down in folklore. And but we ended up winning. I think it's 3-0, did we win?
3-0, yeah.
3-0?
Yeah. McGinn, yourself, and Keith Curl scoring an own goal, would you believe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I scored two.
Is that right?
Yeah, I scored. The first one was, I think I put pressure on a defender, and he the ball went through his legs or miskicked or something, and the keeper, and then ended up taking around him and slotting it. And then the second one was a ball over the top, and I just ran on and just drilled it. And McGinn scored the other. Yeah. And
I'm arguing with you on that one.
Yeah, and then that was the beginning as well of mine and McGinn's sort of partnership as well.
Yeah.
He knew I loved that left channel because, like I said, I was a left winger by trade as a kid. Mm. And what he would do is always spin over into the right channel. Once he knew I was in the left channel, the ball was coming that way, he would spin in the right channel and then just head for the box because he knew I'd just try and find him if I could or go for goal.
Is it right that Brian Small was the only one that didn't get involved in that?
Yeah.
Many camera angles you see. There's only a few pictures of it, but I don't see Brian Small in there anywhere, to be fair.
Smalley. I do love Smalley, yeah. He was, I honestly couldn't even tell you, mate, because like, I just remember clocking Dean Richards.
Oh, my word. Go for the big one.
Yeah, because he was, he had rushed in, and I think something had happened. I think I was got called for the penalty. I think Shez was saying something, penalty on me or something like that. Mm. Then obviously it kicked off with Shez clocking one of their lads. I think it was Jeff Thomas or something like that. Mm. And all of a sudden, there was a melee, and I can see the defender I'm playing against like running in to attack some of my boys. So I just got up and run in behind him, and then it was just like, yeah.
Well, you weren't averse to a bit of that, in fairness, in your
No, I loved that. I loved that side of the game. Do you know what I mean? I was an aggressive person, even though I played relaxed, kind of like a laid back sort of language style of playing. Mm. I loved the battle and the war. Honestly, it was Saturday. It was a great time to take out your frustrations on people. God. If need be, you know.
And certainly did that. I mean, there's some spankings, certainly in the promotion season. It's like 7 past Swindon, but 6 past Grimsby, I remember. Mm-hmm. 6 past Luton.
Mm. And it sounds funny now, because those names sound, you think, oh, Grimsby are bottom of the league too. Well, but they were a good championship club at that time, right? Yeah, Swindon were, you know, they've been in the Premier League. They were a good championship club. You know, and, you know, Oldham, places like that, you know, people don't understand that, you know, on the birth of the Premier League, these teams were all high up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I think Swindon got to the Premier League before Bolton did, if memory serves me correctly.
Yeah, they did, yeah. It was Aussie Idealism, Glenn, yeah. Wasn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, back in that day, back in those days, these were big clubs, like, you know, and yeah, we took them to task, anybody.
Well, I mean, we're going to be hearing a bit more from you this summer, I gather. Have you got the call from the BBC doing a bit of commentary for Wales games? Is that right?
Yes, mate. I've got to do, I do BBC Wales commentary for Welsh internationals for the Euros. And I'll also be doing a bit of Five Live in between, or a bit for Five Live on the Welsh games as well. So, yeah, you'll hear quite a bit of me.
What do you reckon? How do you reckon they can do this, some of them?
We're in a real precarious position, I think, Mark Wales. I look at it and think, well, you know, I don't think we play as good a football as we did in 2016. I think we've become a very much sit, quite deep, counter-attack sort of team. Where I think in 2016 we had a... You know, Gareth Bale was at his height, Aaron Ramsey was at his height, you know, Joe Allen at his height. You know, we had two of arguably the best 5, maybe 10 players in the tournament. I think Aaron Ramsey, missing him in the semis, was why we didn't get to the final. So I think it'll be difficult this time round. Also, there's obviously the Giggs situation. Rob Page taking over temporarily. I think it's a big ask. And then, you know, you compare and contrast. And so people are always going to compare what we do now against what we did in 2016. So I'm kind of trying to, because, like, you know, even though Page is my mate, I always say if you're a pundit, you've got to speak honestly, right? It's no good saying, oh, he's my mate, so I won't cane him. Like you see over that red side of Manchester going on Sky so often.
Yes, you do. Yeah.
Right? I won't cane him because he's my mate. That's in my book, right? If he's your mate, he should be able to... He's happy for you to pour, praise on him. So he's got to be, you know, big enough to take criticism when it comes his way. So I look at Pagey. He's a mate of mine, but, you know, it's going to be a big ask because people are... I'm going to compare it to 2016, but I don't think it's fair, the comparison, because I don't think, like I say, I don't think our players are at their height. With fingers crossed about Ramsey. We got some good youngsters, don't get me wrong, coming through, but we've almost adopted a system which sit deep and, you know, try and hit you on the counter and nick a 1-0. And, you know, through the Nations League, I think we didn't concede a goal and won some like four of our six games like that, or five of our six games, 1-0. So it's remarkable, really. And I think if they can continue that, then, okay, they can get out of the group stage. But, you know, Turkey are in a really good position. Switzerland, difficult team to beat. And then, of course, the big boys, you know, it's always going to be difficult. So it's going to be really difficult. But I think if we can get out of the group stage, I think that's massive. Honestly, I think it's you know, not as big an achievement as the semi-finals, because that would be disrespectful to them, because that was beyond anybody's wildest dreams, I think. But to get out of the group stage now with the current squad, I think that'd be successful. Yeah, successful. Because you've got like young Dave Brooks come back off injury. He's looking good at the moment for Bournemouth. Yeah. Bale is in decent form at the moment. You know, so, you know, we got a chance again at the group stage. If we do, I think that's a success for us.
A bit more pressure on England, but, you know, you're not on the podcast to talk about England. I'm sure you don't care.
Who?
Yeah, yeah.
I love my English club, yeah. Right? And I do miss the old Burnham Park. Even when you said it earlier, I missed Burnham Park. I missed that. It was a shithole, but I missed that shit. It was our shithole, right? Yeah, it was our shithole, and yeah. I really do miss it, you know. But, yeah.
Could do without the England stuff.
Yeah. Even though my daughter's English, because we were living up there at the time. My two old boys are born in Wales, but my daughter gets a lot of stick from them when it comes to football. But she sticks for her guns. She says, I'm English and I'll support England.
Seriously, you're gonna have an England supporter in your household or something?
Yeah, there will be. Yeah, my daughter, she sticks to it. She says, I'm born in England. I think she does it to wind up her brothers, like. But yeah, they have their little banter.
Well, that was Nathan Blake, a true force of nature where Wanderers are concerned. Absolutely fantastic stuff. We'll be hearing much more from him on Buff Extra later in the summer. But for now, thank you very much for joining us. And don't forget, me and Henry will be back with our regular Buff magazine programme on Friday. If you've got any emails you'd like to say to us, anything you'd like to bring up on the Buff, then here's how to get in touch. So you want to bring something up on the Buff? Email Mark and Henry on thebuffmail@gmail.com. That's thebuffmail, all one word, @gmail.com. And sorry to the mail escort, who probably getting some unsolicited Bolton Wanderers correspondence from the people who spelled that incorrectly. But for now, we've had a laugh at least. Alex Baptiste. See you later.